Do not open this door.
I had to say it anyway because it doesn't make sense in the movie.
And then I got on top and I spit into his mouth.
Well, it doesn't ruin my story. It just makes it a conversation rather than a story.
Perhaps a little drunk from the day's festivities.
I would love to meet the woman who liked it.
I love the moon landing from the standpoint of I believe in the moon landing.
All right, so this was a strange one because
this one,
it was kind of strange because I had seen a movie and it inspired me to somehow pair it with another movie, and it wasn't another movie that I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, I'm not sure if these are going to match. I think it's a good match. I think it's a good
pair. Thematically, it's right down the alley.
I didn't know how thematically it would be. I just knew they were both about Hollywood on Hollywood.
Right.
And I was so into this idea that the second movie we're going to talk about later, I invited you over to dinner, not telling you what it was. I think I even covered the television with a bath mat or something so you couldn't
get you put a towel over it.
I really want to keep it a surprise. Mm-hmm. And I also think there's something about this that there's kind of an argument people have against these types of movies, and I just don't share it. I can see it, I guess, philosophically, like Hollywood kind of blowing itself in a way. And it's like, it's really right for like right-winged people who are like, oh, look, Hollywood's celebrating itself. But
some Hollywood blowing itself movies are great movies. Some of them are shitty, but some of them
agreed.
Are fabulous.
I'm not saying it's going to be a good movie, but I don't mind it as a concept because it's like, I love movies. Yeah, yeah. I just have always been in love with movies. So mm-hmm. to me, the whole idea of celebrating it as an art, it's like, I guess you could point out how privileged the actors are in real life, et cetera, but it doesn't mean anything to me because the story of Hollywood's an interesting one.
Yeah. Well, movies about rich actors aren't usually very good.
Movies about rich actors. Okay, that's
kind of... It's not about, like, you know, the wealth they have or anything like that. When mm-hmm. When those movies are good, mm-hmm. it usually involves, at some point, the struggle to get to that point.
Yeah, or maybe The Fall. I mean, I'm thinking of another, you know, a great series I think you should watch. I think it's on Hulu, and it's called Feud. Actually, there are two seasons. The latest one's with about Truman Capote, but the first one was about an 8-episode arc. And it's about Joan Crawford and Betty Davis and their
hatred of each other
ever since they did Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Right.
So it's like, it doesn't have, I mean, it could be success, not success, the mm-hmm. rich, the wealthy, the over the top, the struggle. I think in some ways it's even a little bit got like the same thing the Wild Bunch has built into it, which is not about Hollywood, but it's like, what makes the Wild Bunch so great as a Western is that it's set in 1913, and it's like men going like, "What's this car?"
Yeah.
And wait, planes and World War, you know, and like photography, like they're feeling kind of impotent. They've been on top, and it's changing. The rug's being pulled out from under them. And to me, I mean, there's many great things about the Wild Bunch, which is, I don't want to go too far into that rabbit hole, but it's like, mm-hmm. I like movies that sort of examine a place in history, whether it's something as superficially seeming as Hollywood or just quote unquote real history, where there's this sort of change and people are having to deal with the change.
Right.
And I think in some way, even the first movie we're going to talk about here, which is 1976's Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. is dealing with that.
Okay.
I had no idea what it was about. I mean, the title kind of gives it away, and it's something about filmmaking. But, and I should have noted, yeah, Nickelodeon, it's not going to be the 20s. This is the teens, right. Actually. This is preceding,
super early.
Preceding Birth of a Nation.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about, for a second, Peter Bogdanovich.
Peter Bogdanovich.
There's a whole.
Trying to catch lightning in a jar on this one, I think.
Well, there's a few. Okay, there's this sort of period in the from 1970, 71 to 75 where there's a few people who are like, my God. So, like, look at Nicholson. You got like Carnal Knowledge 71, Last Detail 73, Chinatown 74, One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest 75, Al Pacino, Godfather, Serpico, Godfather 2,
Serpico,
Dog Day Afternoon. Mm-hmm. Ryan O'Neal, who's in this, had Love Story, What's Up, Doc?
Paper Moon,
and then what's the one, the Kubrick one, fuck, the Kubrick one, the Irish Kubrick dueling asshole.
Kubrick.
Barry Lyndon.
Oh, fuck. Right.
So it's like there's all this. And so Bogdanovich is almost doing the hat trick or whatever that these guys are doing. He has, in 1971, he has The Last Picture Show.
Yeah.
In 1972, he has What's Up, Doc, which was commercially successful. And we did it on the Barbra Streisand episode.
Also features Ryan O'Neill.
And also, it's fucking great. I mean, we loved What's Up, Doc.
Fun movie, yeah.
Paper Moon, love it.
Tremendous movie. It really is great.
So by the time 1973 is over with Paper Moon, Bogdanovich was this like wunderkind of Hollywood, right?
Right.
And he had been married to this, I forget her name, but a somewhat successful producer, this wife, and he just threw her overboard for Cybill Shepherd. They became a thing.
Back it up. Beep, I kind of get that. Beep.
Oh, I get it. But I'm just saying, like, look at the larger picture here. It's like, it's almost a classic Hollywood story itself. It's like, oh, I got a little success, going to throw the wife out, who's like a brilliant fucking producer.
The one who got you there, right?
Yeah, or was
she
there
brung
with
you to the
you.
Dance, son.
Yeah, and by the way, after he ditched his wife and started shacking up with Cybill Shepherd, the original wife was like, well, you know what? Fuck you, but also you are pretty great. And she just continued working with him as a collaborator and things. So it's like, well, that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. At the same time, before he makes Nickelodeon, so there's like 70...
Did she produce this one?
I don't know. I'd have to double check that. That's worth looking at. But Bogdanovich is this sort of wunderkind director. Sorry to use that phrase twice. It's douchey, I know. God. And he's living with Cybill Shepherd, who's also wunderkind. He's living with Cybill Shepherd, who's like not only a hot, and she's the same year this comes out, Nickelodeon. She does Taxi Driver. He's processing this idea at the same time, living with them as like a Cato Kalin won't leave house guest is the bloated and broke Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah?
He's living in Bogdanovich's house he's shacking.
Yeah.
And Bogdanovich, what's the Bogdanovich going to say? No to Orson Welles?
Yeah.
But Orson Welles
is like his hero.
It's also like, that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. By the way, Orson Welles had one great idea. And when Bogdanovich took it to the studios, they refused it. And it was, this movie should be in black and white. Now, I don't know what print you saw. Did you see the black and white or the color?
Black and white.
Thank God. I did too, because in 2008, Bogdanovich...
colorized it?
The opposite. Black and white it. It came out in color. I don't think it would have worked in color. It doesn't make sense to have it in color to me now that I've seen it in black and white for the only time. He went to the Castro Theater in San Francisco to premiere the This Is What Orson Always Wanted. It's ridiculous that they wouldn't let me do it in black and white. It is a movie, of course, made for black and white. 100%.
That's upsetting that they didn't.
It's insane. And I don't even want to see the print that's in color. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
Orson Welles still had good instincts. Bogdanovich still had good instincts and Cybill Shepherd had good instincts for leaving him, I think, after this movie.
God damn it, dude. I wanted to love this movie so much.
You know,
I kind of hated it immediately. I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it. I disliked it immediately.
It's almost great, and in being not quite great, it's not quite good.
It's trying, from what I could tell, and correct me if you think I'm wrong.
Well, let me crack my knuckles.
It's trying, it's basically trying to sort of meld three different styles of movie making into one.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so it's a movie about the making of silent films.
Yep.
Okay. Made in the 70s. So it's got the technical sort of aspect of 70s movies here.
Okay.
And it's because there's no sound in silent movies,
right?
They're trying to put like sort of the 30s, 40s snappy patter into the mouths of these actors from the 70s. And it just didn't work.
I didn't think of that. That's interesting.
They're really trying to snappy patter it up, but Ryan O'Neill can't. None of them really had the acting chops to pull it off. And I'll say this, I add a star to any movie with John Ritter in it.
You're a little hot on the mic. Yeah. By the way, fans of the show, Mom, Tom's headphones broke. This is why I'm giving mic directions once in a while. I apologize. So any movie with John Ritter.
Your mom's listening? Anyways, any movie with John Ritter automatically gets a star.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he gets an extra star just because of that.
I, by the way, I'm an unabashed fan of John Ritter's.
Absolutely.
Come and Love Knock on the Door, Skin Deep.
Skin Deep. What a dumb movie, but what a great movie.
Well, The Glow in the Dark Condom was the big selling point, right?
Ah, so great. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, it's just there's so many. It's like the thing is you could tell this. I think I read somewhere that this was really Bogdanovich's like one of his dream projects.
Yeah,
like a
sure.
real labor of love for him to put it together. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I just think it just didn't come. It just didn't work out. It's so much of it that didn't work out. First off,
yeah.
it made me appreciate why silent movies are great. You can't do like that kind of crazy slapstick
yeah.
with things going clatter, clatter
yeah.
is really hard to take after a while.
Well, it's interesting. So it's like, it's boy, so many things I want to respond to, and I have to go backwards.
Do it.
Well, that thing about the slapstick, it's like, it's a neat idea. The idea that it's like, let's have the slapstick actually take place outside the filming that the movie they're making, but that they it's such a wild west of movie making that they somehow follow the crazy shit that slapstick's happening in their lives and they are filming it and integrating it into their plots.
Right.
I love the idea.
Yes.
I think
it seems like it would be a tremendous idea.
I love the idea also, and I think there might have been some truth to this. I just instinctively feel it, and that's that. It's like, you know, Ryan O'Neill is not a director. He's a lawyer who yeah. somehow failed. But it was back then. It was like, what? You can read? All right. You're a writer. You're right. You know, a script editor, whatever mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. And so I like that idea. I think I'm going to say I take a slightly different assessment of than you did. But you're kind of helping me to reshape it. And I would say, so Paper Moon was 1973, and I think yep. It took place in 1933 or something like that. It was FDR's first term or something.
Right, right. Great Depression. Great Depression.
Okay, so I'm going to say, you said the snappy patter of the 40s. I'm going to say it's trying to capture the magic that was Paper Moon, which I think...
That's why I said at the beginning,
fair.
He's trying to catch lightning yes, in a bottle.
I agree with you. And it's trying to replant it in the teens, and the most obvious of the failures, and there are a few here in doing that, is Tatum O'Neill.
Yeah, she can't do it.
She's not good in this, and it's like it's taking taking half the aspects of Paper Moon, where it's like a kid who's smoking and driving a car.
Yeah,
which is like, hey man, I on our last episode or one of our recent episodes, I talked about how much I love Planet of the Apes because monkeys are driving Volkswagens and shooting guns. So I'm down. You got me,
children,
baby.
I get it. Yeah.
But the other half is not there. Her wit, her vulnerability.
Well, the vulnerability. She was still a kid.
She's two dimensional.
Acting like an adult in this movie. Yeah. She's James Cagney.
It's but in the same year, she did Bad News Bears, and it's like she's you know, again, one of those like smoking, drinking, fuck you, 12-year-olds. But the reason it works in Bad News Bears is, again, there's vulnerability. She's got this bum father, Walter Matthau,
right.
who only wants her to help with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in Paper Moon, it works. Maybe actually what you need is a father figure in
right.
her, something to make her sort of pop, because she's the most obviously flat.
Yeah, she is, but I'm gonna say I think Bert kind of came up pretty close on her.
Oh,
in that regard, I'm gonna
now
say
now we
this.
Got some disagreement.
Okay,
right.
There's two the two head actors.
Yeah,
Bert. I almost said Lancaster. Bert Reynolds and Ryan O'Neill.
Yep,
they're really good actors for their day and time. But
yep.
they couldn't pull off. They can't do the patter. They kind of struggled with the slapstick a little bit.
Mm.
They just weren't really believable as the characters they were portraying in the movie. Yeah. I just don't think they were good enough actors to pull it off. And I'm not saying 30, 40 snappy patter actors were tremendous, but they were really good at that.
Yeah. No, I guess screwball.
Roz Russell could really, you know, could deliver that fucking line.
Color.
And later on, she was a great actor, but we didn't know that at the time.
I almost want to say, we should look it up. I want to say that they were paired again in the 80s for something really horrible. And Burt Lancaster became worse and worse as time went on.
Hold on. Burt Lancaster or Reynolds?
I'm sorry, Burt Reynolds. You did it to me. Hedley Lamarr. Burt Reynolds and Ryan O'Neill were cast in something else. But I'm going to say this. I think the only person who's shown through was Burt Reynolds in this movie, and it's because of the vulnerability. Ryan O'Neill is doing the thing that he did in What's Up, Doc, but he's the center point. In What's Up, Doc, Barbara Streisand, Babs, if you will, and Madeline Kahn were working the room,
yeah.
and he has a, I'm a good-looking hunk yeah, nerd,
right.
was sort of being moved around,
right.
whereas in this one, he's actually the guy that's supposed to be moving stuff around.
He's the prime mover of the goddamn movie. That doesn't work.
Whereas I think what's great about Burt Reynolds in this role is that he is kind of funny. He's still in that 70s Burt Reynolds funny, smoking the band at the end, but also... He is the only character who's actually vulnerable in this movie. He actually kind of hurts a little bit in this movie.
Well, he's also the only one whose arc actually makes any kind of sense.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I mean, like somebody he goes to Hollywood to drop off a saddle or something like that. And it's kind of silly, but but that's how they, you know, that's how that happened. I don't know about people just being shoveled into being a director after being a lawyer necessarily.
Yeah.
By the way, also, was it
Brian Keith. Brian Keith is amazing.
He's fucking awesome. I love this guy in fucking everything he does.
He's great in The Lion and the Wind as Teddy Roosevelt the next year.
He's
so good in
this movie. He's the most believable when he's delivering his 30s snappy patter stuff.
JG, get that to this. Oh, it's so great. So he's fantastic. Now, the women in this movie, Stella, Jane Hitchcock is who I'm thinking about. She plays the main love interest. Well, I mean, she's very likable. She's very likable, and she's absolutely fine. There's no way of saying that it doesn't come across as an insult, but it's really the movie that fails around her, and she's unable to save it. Let's maybe put it that way.
Right. Okay, that seems fair. Yeah, she's not... she isn't awful. Mm-hmm. She doesn't stand out in any way except... you can tell she's trying her ass off.
And there are, God bless her for that. Are moments where like I appreciate like what he's doing. The scene where they all go to a Nickelodeon... They see that their films have been chopped up. Then they start leaving. And it's almost like they're reenacting themselves on the street outside the Nickelodeon. A Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin, they're moving. And they look around and the whole crowd is whistling. And and then they move and the crowd's moving behind them. It's a kind of insanity that I think it's almost like I admire. It's like a Spike Lee. If you remember Malcolm X?
The movie or the guy?
Well, either one, but the movie.
We used to hang out. No, the movie, yeah.
Great. By any means necessary here. But the movie I thought was... Actually, I did think the movie was great. But one thing I really admired about Spike Lee was he did this 8-minute like dance number that was like, God damn, that's the Cotton Club. Like, it's really good. Mm-hmm. I admire directors who try to pull that off when they don't need to. They need... Like, studios were making directors do that in the 40s, but when they do it voluntarily like this, like it is here, these sort of like well-executed... crazy scenes where everything has to go right, that it doesn't make a great movie and it doesn't make me love the movie, but there is, I have admiration for this movie.
Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Malcolm X, but Nickelodeon.
Okay. That's, I'm with you on that. I think I said that before.
Yeah.
I was really, I like the, there's definitely a vision going on there.
Yeah.
God bless Bogdanovich. I like Bogdanovich.
I do too. Even though he wore an ascot every day of his life when he turned 18 until he died, I don't know what's going on with that ascot.
His best work, honestly, was in Northern Exposure. But
he was what?
He was in an episode of Northern Exposure.
He had to be talking to Ed, the
director. Indian guy who wanted to be a director, and it was just
a dream sequence.
Well, that might have been. I think that was part of the thing. He might have been talking to Bogdanovich for real, but he might have, and he was talking to Bogdanovich.
Yeah,
or it might have been like, you know, his spirit animal had come to visit. But it was great. It was one of my favorite things in that TV show.
But also, Bogdanovich is not like one of the characters you'd have in one of these movies who falls, you know, and tragically. Somehow, he stopped making good movies, and maybe he stopped being respected. But he ended up doing a bunch of acting gigs. He was in The Sopranos for a while. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
He was a... you know what? Let me just do a quick IMDb, because I feel like he did something else. Imba-da-ba, later on in life that I did like... And it was called...
Wait, wasn't he the other therapist?
Yeah, he was the other...
Oh, God, that's right. I guess I never realized it was him. I love it.
Yeah, along with Lorraine...
Bobbitt.
What? I was going to say Newman. We both had it fucked up. Let me just... Okay, wait. No, I know... Hold on. To Sir with Love Part 2. Well, that can't be good.
What? Shut up. Was that a movie?
Oh, I know what it was. It was actually not a bad movie. I mean, it's easy to make fun of. He directed Mask. That was his one success in the 80s, I think.
With okay.
Eric Stahl. I mean, it's a good movie. It's, you know.
It was good. Yeah. It's Chris Christopherson, right? Was in it as well.
No. You're thinking Sam Elliott. and Cher.
Was that Sam Elliott?
Yeah.
The baby Sam Elliott.
Baby Sammy.
God, dude, he's the only man in Hollywood I think could turn me gay. I don't know. He's something.
I get that less than I get Sean Connery. And I don't mean the baby ones.
What?
I mean, here's what I mean. Sean Connery was shitting his pants in his 90s, and some women were still like, oh, what a hunk. It's like, you got to be out of your fucking mind. Sam Elliott has the world's worst turkey neck. He's liver spotted and horrible. Now, you're talking
good for gnawing on.
Mask? You do like that gnawing on turkey neck. You talking mask, Sam Elliott? Now you're talking. There's some sexy Elliott.
I thought it was Chris Christopherson. He's married to
Kathleen Ross from Butch Cassidy and The Graduate. Hot. But he is by far hotter, even as ugly as he is now, than she is. She is a nightmare. And her daughter tried to stab her last year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
With her fork?
Stick a fork in it, Tommy. All right. Anything else about Nickelodeon?
It's a movie because it's a movie about Hollywood I wanted to love, you know, mm-hmm. and I just... It's
watch it once, but mediocre. That's I'll only watch it once, and I will go back to Paper Moon. Last Picture Show, my mm-hmm. God, and to some degree, What's Up, Doc? Great, probably I'll go back to it less, but still, great stuff.
Okay, before we move on to our second movie, let me just throw out a hypothetical.
Throw a bone to me, buddy.
What's your favorite old Hollywood movie?
You mean
that's not this next one?
That's not this next one. A movie that's about, well, I mean, it's kind of a connection here. Maybe Singing in the Rain.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
who could argue with that?
That's a great, I mean, Singing in the Rain still.
Okay. I think my favorite is a little number called Day of the Locust. Did you ever see that?
No. Is that about Hollywood?
Yeah.
Why I've avoided it for 87 years is that I hear it and I think like a Marvel movie type thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, I should watch it then.
Oh, yeah. It's really good.
Hey, Day of the Locust. I think sci-fi.
No. Mm. No, it's... Mm-mm-mm. You'll get it. When you watch the movie, you'll get it. Yeah. And read the book. The book is even better. Catherine Ann Porter, I think.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. So
to our next movie.
We're talking about 2021, I believe. And that is... 2022's Babylon.
Movement of your people.
I don't know. This is like the Killer of the Flower of the Moon situation. I have no idea whether you loved or hate this movie. We haven't talked about it.
It took me a while. I didn't come away knowing exactly the answer to that question right
there. That's fair.
I will say. So, okay. First off, when did we watch this again?
It was a week ago.
Yeah, about a week ago.
Yeah.
I still have an erection.
Yeah.
From that viewing. Yeah. There's some, what's her name? Jesus.
Margot Robbie.
Fuck. I've never seen her as a brunette before, so it actually took me a few minutes to figure out who the hell that was.
It was supposed to be Emma Stone, which I could see.
Yeah, but...
This is the guy who did La La Land, so... Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so, that's another great
one.
Okay,
so here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect movie. I have a couple of issues with it, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. But in the meantime, the cinematography is fucking amazing. The art direction?
Crazy.
It didn't win. If it didn't win, it should
have.
This
won nothing. This was nominated for anything.
That art direction was as good as anything I've ever seen. It's one of some of the best I've ever seen. It's so beautifully put together.
It's a movie that divides people. People seem to either love it or hate it.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Let's put it that way. I think you love it, but we'll get into that in a sec.
Well, Margot Robbie... That's an interesting question. If you look at Paul Newman and Robert Redford, mm-hmm. these are two classically astounding looking men. Most people will say that, and I agree, that Paul Newman is better looking than Robert Redford, even though they're both great looking.
Mm-hmm.
What's not as controversial is, regarding those two, is Paul Newman, people will also say, he's not only amazing looking, gorgeous, very good actor. Robert Redford is so good looking that it takes you a while to realize he's actually not a good actor.
No, yeah.
He's not a good actor. He's very likable. Right. I almost always enjoy his movies.
And he very often achieves competence.
But he's only competent. He's basically that. And you're like, oh, I guess this is what beauty does. And so sometimes with Margot Robbie, she's so astounding.
Doubt your senses.
You fall kind of in love with her as a person. She's so good looking. It's mm-hmm. remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just like crazy how good looking she is. And so I'm willing at times to question is she a good actress? I'm not, or is that a good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I think she's good in this.
Yeah, she's great in this, actually.
I think she's great, except I have one scene where I fault her a bit, and we can get to that. Mm-hmm. But that might be less her and more the movie doing something. But I think this is a great movie, but I definitely know I really enjoyed watching it two times.
Yeah.
I had a really good time watching this movie.
Yeah. It's great. I thought she was tremendous. I think she's more than just beautiful. That's the thing.
What is it?
She's got a quality of charisma that just is amazing.
The obvious connection, right? Well, who she's playing. Let's draw the lines here, because all these people are essentially
parallel to other
are kind of a parallel to somebody historically in the movies. And the parallel she is Clara Bow.
Okay.
In all ways, not only that she's the sort of, they even say the it girl, movie she makes that breaks her through is one of them. It's very close to a title of a Clara Bow movie that we did. I think like Call Her Savage or something when we did Clara Bow. There's even a reference, I mean, her father, her mother being in a nut house, her father being this shitty promoter.
And her kind of going insane,
her being a bit of a problem, but super, everyone falls in love with her.
Right. She's the one. Oh, my God. A woman like that is trouble, my friend.
Yes. My wife was saying today as I was coming over here, she goes, oh, I wanted her to
take out the garbage.
You're no more, Robbie. I wanted to record her saying this so I could drop it into the podcast here, because she was joking all week that at one point she looked over at you and she was like, I'd better not cross his field of vision, because he'll push me into a door or something, that you were like drooling. And I was like, oh, I don't blame him. She is insanely all that stuff. Oh, but also the other parallel,
she's sexy, but she's
it's charisma. Way more than that.
She's got sexy,
it's something,
she seems nice.
It's the it factor.
Yeah.
And also there's another reference in there to like something about how she had a restaurant based on one of her movies. That's directly Clara Bow.
That's interesting.
So that's a Clara Bow character. I mean, we can go all down the line and sort of name possibly who these people line up with.
Okay. I would have thought my initial take on what's his name, Brad Pitt's character, was that he might have been frankly, my dad, I don't give a damn. Like, I kind of thought maybe Clark Gable.
It's too early, and there's a scene where he's being replaced, and he's being replaced by Clark Gable in the Mogambo poster. The theory, he's the loosest one, but the theory is Douglas Fairbanks.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And then you have the Asian woman, and that is a direct Anna Wong.
That makes sense.
Who was gay,
yeah.
I mean, apparently, and is not afraid of being gay in this movie.
Oh, boy, is she not. And then I really liked our Hispanic actor, the lead actor. I don't know his name, unfortunately.
Yeah, let's look it up here.
He's fucking... He really pulled it off.
He wears Diego Calva. Diego Calva... He has one of the most expressive blank faces.
Yeah.
He blankifies his face to what's happening, and then it's almost like you're seeing, without looking at what he's looking at, you're seeing it off his face. I mean, he is good.
He, in a very different sense, like Jesse Plemons does.
Yeah.
In like, a less it's repulsive like, sense. Like being still.
Yeah. No, I got you.
But readable.
You know?
And so this guy was, I thought he did a tremendous job. He was my favorite thing in the whole movie.
Oh, my God. And
well, then Margot Robbie.
I mean, and also just sometimes it felt like vignettes that were strung along, although I saw an arc. I mean, the thing where he's on the set of the movie, and I'll jump back in a second. We can start from the beginning, but where he's at the scene, he's on the set of the movie, and they've broken the last camera, and he has to go.
That whole scene was tremendous.
It was fantastic, and also they're clearly mocking the current IT guys, like, hey, this guy wants to know if there's a difference between a 27B and a 27. Well, there's a difference. I mean,
let me get to my blog about this.
Rory Scovel, one of your guys, the stand-up, Rory Scovel plays the pusher with the cape.
Yeah.
Spike Jonze, who directs all those Kaufman movies, was the German director.
I kind of loved him.
Well, they had...
Losing his fucking mind.
It's one of those movies, too, where it's like, an obvious comparison, Judgment at Nuremberg, where you clearly have people who are signing on just to be in it as something.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Garland plays a weird 1920s version of Harvey Weinstein.
Right.
He so naturally looks like him, by the way. Anyway.
He kind of pulls it off.
Yeah.
Now, there were a couple of like just interesting cameos like that for sure.
But it starts off in that weird sort of the delivery of the elephant and the party.
Oh, shit.
And the party, by the way, is I liked it more the second time I saw it. The party is a point at which people will be turned on or turned off to the movie. And the first time I saw it,
I know what I was.
It was, I mean, I don't mean Jesus. Obviously that way, but I mean, it's a wild party. I mean, it's like,
well, it's great. And it starts calm.
Yeah.
The elephant scene, that's great. But then you get into the party and it's just a nice woman urinating on a chubby man on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes bananas.
Yeah, and
such a good scene.
It was great, but the first time I saw it, I had a little like cynicism about like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But the movie, to me, I love the movie so much. A lot of people hold the whole movie in the type of cynicism you could have about that first scene. Like, this is just kind of like quasi-pornography. It's just trying to be in your face, over the top. But to me, it's sort of like, I hate to be the asshole here, but one of the threads of the movie is that the whole world is over the top and no one knows what direction they're going in. So you kind of have to have it be a madhouse.
Right. Well, and also when I talk about art direction throughout the movie, it's tremendous, but in that scene,
it's insane. I don't know how they filmed it.
How the fuck did that even happen? I don't know. Yeah. That's what's funny is, okay, that's a movie about that's a scene about the debauchery of Hollywood and all that, and all the behind the scenes, but it's an absolute encapsulation of the art form.
In itself, scene. The fact that it was filmed I mean, it's crazy. You'd have to be in admiration, putting all your sort of cynicism or morality, whatever aside, of how well it's executed.
Yeah.
It's just fucking
great. I mean, you can tell you, like, Scorsese in his one shots.
Yeah.
All right, like, you know, the good cellos going through the restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, if you just had clowns butt fucking every three feet.
Yeah.
Then we'd be somewhere in the neighborhood of this guy.
And by the
thing.
Way, I'm going to say, you know, everyone talks about the Goodfellas, the tracking shot in the basement that you just mentioned. Everyone talks about Touch of Evil, the shot going from the Tijuana over the counter. This has about 12 of those.
Yeah.
At least, where you're just like, how are they continually doing this shit?
Fuck those battle scenes during their filming that goddamn movie.
I mean, people the dying. Fucking battle scene. So the one, I think he ran into a spear. I mean, it's just, it's totally insane. It's darkly humorous.
Right.
Anyway, so it's like, what is the story really? It's the story of Hollywood. It's the story of the Clarabeau character. It's the story of her small sort of dying star, shining light or whatever it is. It's the story of Brad Pitt sort of representing another contingency of actors in that time where it was much bigger, much longer, but the fall was much harder too.
Yeah. Let me ask you this real quick.
Please,
Manuel, our Hispanic gentleman.
Diego Calva.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who did he represent? Like, who was he kind of a relative to? I couldn't quite place it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right.
I'm not sure there's a one-to-one either. The African-American trumpeter, you could probably name a few people who he'd represent.
Yeah, right in that neighborhood,
By the way, I don't want to say too much about this because, I mean, we can talk about this specific scene later on. That's really amazing with him. But I just read something interesting about, I'm a huge fan of the jazz guitarist Barney Kessel, who died in like, I don't know, 2004 or something. Mm-hmm. But he started playing in the 30s. I mean, he's just a lifelong, one of my favorite jazz guitar players. Barney Kessel was in a movie in the 30s, one of these sort of like, let's put the band, the jazz band, in the movie.
Yeah.
And he was the only white guy in the movie. And so you never see Barney Kessel above the neck.
Shut up.
And they blackened his hands.
No way, really?
Yeah, I just read this recently.
Fuck.
I thought, having seen Babylon,
that's
like
a crazy one-to-one right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the way, I do have to say this. I thought the movie in this music,
mm-hmm.
the music in the movie was right up at the top. It was
and
so
it's,
good.
It's one theme. Da, 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 yeah. da, 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 and then they just slow it down for the sad parts. It's the same thing.
Such a good. It's the music is wonderful in this movie.
It drives you. It makes you sad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought even the bit players. One person I really really liked was Jean Smart as Eleanor. No, I'm sorry, Eleanor St. John as Jean Smart, who plays.
The critic.
Yeah, it's almost what's the Hedda Hopper? But Hedda Hopper was kind of a cunt back then, and this is like Hedda Hopper with a philosophy. Her, I'm jumping all
over
the place.
It's like Hedda Hopper with what's her name, Kale.
Pauline Kael.
Pauline Kael, yeah.
Pauline Kael Hopper, yeah. Her speech really to Brad Pitt's character, the Douglas Fairbanks character, it could have been very, very bad. And I'm not sure if she delivered it well or everything else made you feel like it had earned it. Yeah. But it hit home, like, not only for them, but for all of us.
Yeah.
All of us will... We're gonna fade away from the greatness that we thought was important, and we're humiliated, and we're saddened by it. But it's like, think about how lucky you are. In some contexts, and the characters in this one are in that context, that you can be revived. You will be. Mm-hmm. You will be resurrected and appreciated and dusted off once in a while.
Kind of a form of immortality, in a sense, yeah.
And by the way, it wasn't like that was the theme of the movie that kept getting pushed. It was like you were kind of surprised when she gave that speech, and yet after she gave it, it was like, oh, yeah, it's so obvious that that was a point the movie's trying to make. And I like the fact that a movie that's this seemingly like dynamic, it hurts almost, it's so dynamic, that it wasn't philosophically, I felt, pushing it too hard. You weren't sure. I felt sad about the story. I felt sad about the love story. It was about Hollywood. It was about the people lusting toward Hollywood, but not really seeing the inside of it. It doesn't rip off a Singing in the Rain. It takes a couple of scenes purposely and kind of repositions them, but clearly says we're doing that via the ending of the movie.
Well, anybody who's ever seen Singing in the Rain, I saw it the moment it was happening on screen. But
it's not trying to hide it like, oh, these kids won't know. No. We're cribbing this.
No, no, no. But it's also not spoon feeding. Well, look, we're getting to that. Maybe we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. And I think that's where we'll have a disagreement, but also kind of an agreement, I think. But so it's having all of that sort of stuff happening. I forgot I was going with it. But anyway,
it was stupid.
It was really dumb, my point.
Okay, so let's switch over, because I do have a few criticisms.
Please.
It's not a perfect movie, I think.
Okay.
The scene with Tobey Maguire? That character in there? Look, I get it. Hollywood also has a dark underbelly, but what are we doing here? What are we, fucking Hunter Thompson?
I just thought it was interesting.
It was interesting.
I just thought it was like a way to put like one more interesting, like one more unexpected and creative and interesting thing in there. I know what you're saying.
It kind of didn't fit so well.
It didn't. I agree. But it's kind of what I like about it in a weird way. What you're saying, though, if you're interpreting it this way, and maybe I should go back and think about it.
Yeah.
If it is like, let's examine the dark side of Hollywood, like True Hollywood Story or something, then yeah, that was a stupid move. But I just took it as like, what other left turn could this sort of...
Oh, in that sense, it was a great moment. It was a great moment in the movie. But so, I mean, it's kind of obviously saying this is how, like, the deterioration of Hollywood. Because there's a distinct parallel between that and the opening party.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's a distinct parallel that's going on. And then it's kind of... And then it's, it's all gone to hell. And now we have, like, torture. Now we have cannibal dungeons.
It just
goes a little too far down that road.
I could see it.
It's a little James Ellroy... versus, but so that's it. But again, delightful scene. I've never been so upset by the goddamn cash thing. That was so fucked up.
That's an interesting thought. It's like a real case of, you know, when you talk about writing and the classic line is like, kill your darlings. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a darling that should have been killed off for that reason. Because by itself, it's fantastic, but maybe it's like still not quite worth the...
Well, I think
the salt or whatever.
That's one of the things I have with the movie, which is that the ending kind of has a couple of those moments. I'll be honest with you. I think the perfect place to end the movie would have been right after that speech.
No.
That would have been a great ending. That would have been tremendous. Instead, it gets a little bit... Oh, boy. I can't say the word.
Please.
It gets... I'm going to say self-indulgent, but what I'm really meaning is in some places, it gets a little condescending at the end.
Well,
it goes on a long time. It has a lot of endings going on.
Well, there's one of...
Okay, most of it which were implied.
I thought you were going to say something else about a different ending, but one of the places where it also could have ended, theoretically, I'm glad it didn't end there, but I didn't see it... It could have ended because it didn't seem like it was being preachy, was just the sort of the love story. It's like he, in some ways, it's a little like the way he is like Barbara Streisand in The Way We Were. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't this thing happen? I'm so in love with you. And she is, it's not even like she's mean. She's just incapable.
Yeah.
And she's just that off the beam. So it's like, it's I liked that sort of the ground glass of tragedy I felt mm-hmm. during that part of it. Now, when the first time I saw it, I struggled a little bit with the actual ending. And then the second time I saw it, I appreciated it way more because the camera turns itself. There's a point where it gets so visually stunning, and I saw it happen to you too. You almost start turning away, like stop. You're a little bit like
it's a lot.
Clockwork Orange, like yeah. Oh. But that's the point it's going for, and it is.
Yeah, I get that.
It's probably the place where I see the most open. I most accept the possible criticism of like, all right, already sell it, hooray for Hollywood, all that sort of stuff. But it did seem like it. It felt the depth was felt genuine, even if it didn't work.
Okay, I will grant you that. What I will say when I say it seemed a little bit condescending in that sort of montage at the end, which is about the celebration of Hollywood,
right.
Which I get, I fucking love
sure,
it.
Sure.
And I get what he was going for, the director, at this point. But then he went back over the whole movie. Like, I remember the movie we were in.
I know.
And it kind of bugged me.
But you got it in a new context because everyone appeared in a photograph that had been taken of them. And you actually do remember that photograph being taken as part of the plot. Mm-hmm. So, like, the two guys who were at the Mexican wedding or something, as improbable as that is, where
the Mexicans getting married?
Where they're almost out. They're escaping. He's escaped. And they run to the place where she's dancing with them.
Right.
And he agrees. He's like, you're really going to marry me? And you just know she isn't, but you also know what that's like to believe that.
Yeah.
And so those guys have that photograph. And so it's splicing the Hollywood greatness with like almost the personal movies that people had. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where is the distinction? Because we see ourselves, you know, your dad had 300 or plus whatever home movies that he made since he was 18 years old, right? Mm-hmm. The Super 8 movies.
Quite a few, yeah.
And all of those are things that you, like, we relate to, and we remember ourselves in those movies. And every family has a version of those, whether it's like photo albums from JC, from Sears or whatever it is. And then there's the movies. And in some ways, I think it's true that we, in the culture we live in or have lived in with Hollywood, there's a Venn diagram there between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what it's trying to do. And maybe it's just too hard to do it successfully without seeming condescending.
Yeah. It's a pretty goddamn good movie. I mean, this is a great movie. You know what I really want to see? I want to see you make Dave watch this fucking thing.
Yeah.
I know. Dave has... He has no patience.
No patience for.
But I thought it was fuck. What a director! The art.
By the way, that's the kind of thing too, where I'm like, even if you don't like the movie, or even if I hadn't liked the movie, I'm like, I admire anyone who sits down and goes, "Here's my plan, and this is the thing." But it's like, holy shit!
And then
shit.
He made something beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
With the most beautiful woman in the history. Oh my God.
I was gonna say the one part of the movie I didn't like very much was when they're trying to rehab her, and they go to that party. Initially I thought it was kind of funny when she's putting on the airs, but when she went over the top and she's eating lobsters or whatever it was kind of like, this feels like bad acting. Like that, I would have cut that 10 minutes out.
Yeah. I go with you on that one. Yeah. It wasn't the best for either the movie or for her.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's a 3-hour,
you know what it is?
Here's
what it
is. Movie,
it seemed like, you know what it is? It seemed like it came out of like Suicide Squad,
which is one of hers I haven't seen.
It looked like a new movie. Like, right in the middle of this movie, it's like somebody acting like, you know.
See, that's how in love with this movie I am. I think that's what it was trying to do, Tom. It was making reference
to... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I need distance from this movie.
And the snake shall eat its own balls.
I know, yeah. I need distance from this movie. Mm-hmm. And seeing it twice in a month is probably too much. But I will say this. I think I can envision a time where I see this movie as more flawed. But I think I will always... Like, a lot of movies... Like by Tarantino, it's movies like that. I'll always appreciate the first time I saw it, where you're just like, whoa, this is just brand new coming at me.
This is a movie that could actually stand being watched multiple times.
No,
there's so much going on.
Agreed.
If
but
and
I mean,
only if in the first part you just pause.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Titties and bush as far as the eye can
see. You know what I mean, where you're like, Inglourious Basterds is that way. Well, you didn't like...
Pulp
Fiction. Yeah. It's that way where it's like, oh yeah, you can watch it many times, but there's only going to be the one time where it blows, the first time it blows you away. Like, what the fuck is happening here?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to say it sounds like we're...
What a shocking movie, too. That fucking opening...
To which?
Of just trying to get the fucking elephant up the hill was harrowing.
And it does start out slow. There are two hills, by the way. I just put that together. There's the elephant, and then there's Brad Pitt being drunkenly walking up to the hill to the kiss with a butterfly.
I've fucking seen that scene. God, that goddamn scene. He's so fucking hammered.
Yeah.
And then the moment the camera's on, click, it just clicks.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. I'm going to say with Nickelodeon, we were in agreement. It was like, good try, but a swing and a miss.
Just a fail. Yeah,
I liked Babylon more than you did. I think we both thought it was a good movie.
It's an excellent movie.
And it'd be interesting to think about, like, from an editor's point of view. This is a 3-hour, 10-minute movie. If you were to take, let's say, even 40 minutes out of it, like, could you do it? And it's a big, great movie. Yeah, of course it would. Yeah. And so what would be worth taking out?
I like that it keeps alive the movies of today are too long. I like that it's keeping that argument still going.
I love
That's
it.
That's never going to go away.
Yeah. Well, but that happened with Kills of the Flower Moon, much to our dismay. Not to our surprise.
Which I didn't think for a minute, like, didn't earn him every second of that fucking movie, so.
Oh, yeah, no, it's that one's like 3.5 hours long. I thought it was a masterpiece.
It's very self-indulgent.
Yeah, good. Indulge, people. Indulge, I say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for watching it with me, and
was great, man.
You got the next episode, so pick something good.
Yeah, no problem. I tell you, I'll let you in on this, though. While we were watching it, I was getting a lot of anxiety because I thought, oh, fuck, we're going to do a Voth. He's going to want to talk about this tonight.
No way.
No way. Okay.
No. I think that's... I don't think we do that ever anymore. Mostly we don't watch movies together,
waiting for you to go, but you know, we don't do this anymore, Tom. I'm waiting for that. So, I had a little bit of anxiety on that.
Come into this other room. Da, 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 da. All right. Love you, buddy. Thanks for watching with me.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.